Alright, time for another DraftPhysics.com video presentation. So, Despard's lab has posted a video that's supposed to be a response video. It's really not even close to getting to the subject. So, I will once again point out. So, there's obviously I can make lots of different arguments, in my opinion, demonstrating that gravity is a time-dependent force. That all that matters is how much time are you in the rain, it'll decide how wet you get. It's Mach gravity. So they teach this, okay? The highest paid relativists use this analogy to teach relativity, to teach bent space-time. so the idea is that you have a mass and it creates a gravity well. And the gravity well essentially means a force, okay? They get stronger as you go out, okay? I mean, it's stronger close, you know, thick line of, you know, big arrow, thick arrow, and the arrow gets thinner and thinner and thinner as you go further out, okay? Meaning how much rain is going to hit you towards the object. So all the rain is falling towards the center of the mass, and it's just about how much rain is going to hit you. There's a certain amount of rain at each level, you could say. You know, there's 5 million little raindrops, and then there's 5 million raindrops on this circle, and there's 5 million raindrops on this big circle, and so it gets less and less and less. You go further out at a inverse square relationship. Okay. So anyway, the simple argument is that you have this force moving this way, pushing you this way, and if you're going this way against it, perpendicular to that force, the amount of force that will act on you is completely dependent on how fast you travel through the substance of the gravity, the place where you're going to be close enough to be affected in some substantial way. At these longer distances, the gravity is so weak it doesn't matter. And in a sense, they're counterproductive, in the sense that this one's pulling you some measure this way and some measure this way. And this one, when you're leaving, is going to be pushing you exactly the opposite, some measure this way and some measure this way, okay, in terms of this direction. So those two directions will cancel, and all you're getting is this weak direction in. So in a sense, there's no, the amount of pull will be taken away by the leaving. Now that changes if this object's moving. So if this object is part of a solar system and you have a sun here and this object's moving this way, then that scenario changes a bit because you become gravitationally locked. And then you can gain the velocity of the object you're locked to and then leave. So it's like a flywheel. It's sort of an interesting subject, but it's not the same subject, okay? So say I have a flywheel that's rotating, has little paddles on it. And I match my velocity, you know, well enough that I can hit right where the paddle's coming and it's going to hit me. And then I become part of the flywheel. Now I can leave with the velocity of the flywheel at any point I wish to, you know, just by adding a little bit of energy to leave. So I essentially have locked myself to the velocity of the flywheel, and I've gained the extra velocity in any direction. So I went in with, say, velocity this way. I gained some velocity this way, and I can leave with those two arrows totaled. So I can gain motion because I can steal motion from something's rotation, whether the rotation is it spinning or whether the rotation is it moving in a direction. So either way, I can steal some of its motion by adding mass to it, by locking to it gravitationally, adding mass to the object. The object now will be moving slower. It'll lose a little bit of velocity because I'm essentially adding mass to it. It's obligated to move me, so I'm gaining mass from it. So when the Voyager or other little spacecraft or even the landing on the moon, they did the same thing. You become gravitationally locked, steal some velocity, then you go home faster than you got to the moon. Because you gained a little bit of its, you took some of its velocity. The moon moved a little slower. Every time we landed on the moon, we stole a little bit of the moon's velocity. The little orbiting spacecraft stole a little bit of the moon's velocity. All right, so it's such a giant object, obviously you'd never notice the amount of theft, okay? It's a penny in a $1 trillion pile of pennies. Anyway, so my simple argument was this is all you got to know is how much time did it spend getting pushed this way? Okay, the less time it spends, the less you will change the trajectory, the less bending there will be in the object as it passes, because it's being influenced by less force. Less force actually hits it because it moves faster through it. So it's just like if I have a hole in a roof and it's raining through the hole, and then I ask you to run across the hole, the faster you run across the hole, the less rain's going to hit you. Just a fact. Okay, and the same thing's happening with gravity. And there's no, I mean, you're not going to find a logical or a physical proof to debunk this, okay? Because, again, they use this very analogy to describe the most theoretically complex parts of physics. So it's already been pretty well tested as, yeah, that is pretty much what happens. That's sort of the facts. Okay, so the fact is, it works. This example works, and it fits all the evidence. Now, the only thing it doesn't fit is your silly notion that a 10-ton train, okay, going 5 miles an hour, and a 5-ton train going 10 miles an hour aren't the same thing. You say the 5-ton train is twice as much. Well, you can't see that, but okay. Twice the arrow. See, big long arrow. Little short arrow. Okay. So, now, if that were true, okay, you'd have an argument, but you have no evidence that's true, okay? The argument is the lever proves that, no, they're the same thing. So my simple example, you'll see it in the video, frankly, is just talking about a stationary object. We're not using motion here, any of that kind of garbage, and it wouldn't make any difference to my point anyway, in the sense that you can't use the extra velocity gain from stealing some of the gravitational rotation around the sun as an argument for why this doesn't gain the same amount of energy depending on the speed I go through it. And the fact is I can't gain any speed forward from what is a force bending me this way. If it doesn't bend me this way, then it has to be, the velocity has to go somewhere. So your argument is, it doesn't matter how fast I go through this, that I get bent the same amount. No matter how fast I go through the gravity, I'm bent the same amount. That's not true. You have no evidence that's true. Blah, 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 blah. All right, so let's deal with the straw man counter argument, because it really isn't the same subject at all. All right, so we will hit this button and play the video.
Okay, so this is going to be a response video to Graph Science about the flyby argument.
All right, now the flyby argument, let's just understand that the flyby argument also goes for, let's say I was, this is the gravitational body over here. Well, I have to do this, don't I? Yeah, I have to disappear this for a moment. Yeah, okay. And say you're sitting out here in gravity, and you'll gain a certain amount of velocity into the sun. So whatever this distance is, it means a certain amount of time that you're going to be in the gravity, and the gravity is going to accelerate you. All right. Now, if you give it a velocity ahead of time, if I shoot a bullet at the Earth from space, the fact is the bullet is now going at a very high velocity. It's going to be in the gravity much shorter time, 1/4 of the time, 1/8 of the time. So it's going to gain less from gravity. Now, it is going much faster, and it will hit the sun at a much higher velocity, but the amount it gains from gravity is going to be infinitesimally small, and it gets smaller and smaller and smaller the faster I shoot the object into the sun, because you can logically understand that the strongest gravity is where it's going the fastest. It's going the fastest through the strongest gravity. It's going faster and faster and faster. So where the gravity is 9 meters per second, it's only 8 meters, it's only 7. I can go back further and further and further away I go. The faster it's going to keep going in the strongest gravity, and it's going to gain less and less from it. And so the speed becomes almost a trivial increase. Like it's, so it could be infinitesimally small the faster I shoot the object into the sun or the Earth or whatever the gravitational body is. So if I shoot something into gravity at a very high, like meteors. A meteor comes at us at a preposterously high speed, 50, 60,000 miles a second or whatever, some kind of nonsense. Anyway, it gains very little from the gravity. The gravity steers it, but the gravity is not going to have much effect on its absolute velocity because it's going to be in the strong gravity such a tiny amount of time because it's going so fast. So something can only gain from gravity if it takes time to sit in it and free fall. If it's going faster than the free fall velocity, that is faster than the velocity it can gain from gravity, then its original velocity is going to dominate and its gained velocity is going to be trivial. Fact. It's just, these are just facts. Sorry. They're facts. Okay.
Not going to be a total video in the sense that I have figured it all out. I'm just going to share what came into mind first. And I'm going to look up...
All right, well, whatever. You know, I mean, I've taken 10 years to develop this, and you're sitting here saying, oh, well, I'll knock it down by not even giving it a trivial amount of thought. Thank you. I appreciate it. But clearly, I'm going to demonstrate how the triviality of the amount of time you've spent, the amount of thought you've given it, is demonstrated in the fact that you don't get any of the facts right.
Some more information about it later, particularly about the physics and the mathematics behind it.
So again, I keep asking for people to draw a simple model explaining how it functions. What will happen when this happens? When you do this, you fly by a gravitational body. What actually happens? You bend less and less depending on how fast you go. Now that's the fundamental and absolute fact, and that fact indicates that, yes, it's because you're going through the rain of gravity fast, and therefore very few drops have an opportunity to hit you, because you're not in it long enough.
About flybys. So first I'm going to show you a part of the clip, of the video clip, just to have a better grasp about what this is all about.
Ash, you fly by it quick.
Oh.
Time you're in the gravity, you change how much gravity you're affected by. So I've given this simple, the most obvious of thought experiments that really are, they've already done these things. I mean, I've already pointed out NASA overtly tells you, you know, we basically just use the Newton stuff.
Yeah, NASA knows that it's just about mass and velocity. And that's all there really is, and that's all that's going to move you in space, is how much mass are you being affected by, and what's its velocity. And this squaring stuff will not give you right answers. NASA knows that the gun, the recoil of the gun, is the same energy as the energy of the bullet. The bullet is not 2,000 joules, and the gun only 2 joules.
All right, it's just a simple little flyby argument. You fly by a gravity well. You fly by it slowly, you crash. You fly by it quickly, you barely get even moved.
Yes, I can perfectly understand that. If I have an object and it has zero velocity.
So this has, right, you start right from an analogy that has nothing to do with the subject, right? It has zero velocity. This isn't about something that has zero velocity except for the mass that you're being attracted to. It's all about having a it's not about what gravity gives you, it's about what you take from gravity. And the fact is the faster you go through gravity, the less it can give you.
And I let it drop, it will fall into a straight line down to the earth, to the source of gravity. If I throw it, it will have another pathway. And it will take more time. It will be up.
Okay, so right there, he's just fundamentally made a big, giant mistake. It's wrong. It's inaccurate. It's incorrect. It's, you know. So we'll deal with that. I'll erase, and we'll deal with that. All right, should be dry enough. Anyway. All right, so there's two mistakes he's making, really. I mean, two. Well, anyway. So say if I had a baseball player, okay, and he's going to throw a 90-mile-an-hour fastball, okay. The fact is, okay, unlike what he just said, is that he could just drop the ball, let it go from here, or he can throw it 90 miles an hour this way, and the fact is it's going to hit the ground in exactly the same amount of time. This falling speed will not change. So no matter what I throw it this way, it ain't going to change unless I throw it up. Obviously, if I throw it up, okay, now I'm throwing it into a higher point in gravity, and it's going to take the extra time that it's going to take to decelerate, and then it's going to accelerate. So we're going to have, we have a different falling distance. So if you throw it up first and then let it fall from gravity, yes, it'll take longer. But if you shoot it straight, okay, it doesn't matter how far you shoot it until you shoot it around the curvature of the Earth. The fact is you're not going to, you know, you can't get into an orbit until you match the curvature of the Earth. That is, you fall towards the Earth at the same rate at the that the Earth is curving away from you. So you're not going to have an escape situation. You know, you're falling, okay, through that whole process at the same rate. So if I just drop the ball, it hits the ground at the same time as it hits the ground over here. Same time. All right. So it's in the same amount of rain. So it's the, you've ruined my analogy by making, I made an analogy of a hole in a surface, and you have gravity coming through the hole. All right, and you're going to run across that hole. Well, what you've done in this analogy is you've extended the hole to the entire running surface. So now I can't run this distance. I can't change how much rain's going to hit me because I can't escape the hole. So obviously it doesn't matter how fast I run because I can't escape getting away from the hole. So you've sort of broken the analogy entirely. But it's just not true that this will be a longer period of time. It won't. It'll hit the ground at the same time. So that's one fact. And the second fact is this isn't about escape velocity. This, again, I drew something very simple. All you had to do was say, yes, this is the strong gravity right here. And we're just talking about how much exposure you have to it. So it's like a light being on. And you're just saying, how much light is going to hit me? So I've pointed out millions of times, its inverse square law is exactly the same as a light bulb, okay? It's the same thing. It's just the reverse. Light leaves a light bulb in exactly the same way that gravity goes into a body, in the sense that it's the same inverse square law. So you can understand it's just whether you're going out or whether you're going in, right? So gravity is going in, light comes out. But they're doing exactly the same thing, and you can kind of figure out that if you're you have a piece of exposed film, the faster you move the film past this aperture, this opening where the light is hitting you the strongest, the less your film's going to be developed. So, I mean, he's really not coming anywhere close to the argument being made. This is all just straw man mush.
Here a longer time, and it will take a longer time before it will fall onto the surface of the Earth. If I can throw it with so much energy, with enough energy, maybe I can throw it such that it will escape the gravitational pull.
So it's being in orbit is not escaping the gravitational pull. All orbits are relationships between the fact that the Earth is a sphere, that it's producing the gravity spherically, so that the gravity does get weaker if you continue a linear line, and there's a perfect point where the amount the Earth is curving away exactly matches your change in distance, so you get pulled exactly the same amount as the Earth is curving away from you,
and it will fly out into space, and it will no longer be bent by this light.
So of course it will continue to be bent. So I do that straight thing, I beat the curvature. Yes, I'm going to escape, but I'm going to escape on a curved path.
The gravitational pull. So I can understand the slower an object is, the more it is affected by gravity, and the more it will be bent. And
so I know you're saying I can understand, and yet you're using an example that's just plainly incorrect. It doesn't have anything to do with how fast you're going in a, like I said, if I'm using a hole in the roof analogy, you're using a no roof analogy. You can't do that. If you're in the gravity, you have to be affected by the gravity. And the point is that the whole point of the flyby is that you're changing how much exposure you have to the gravity by having a high velocity.
Fall into it. The faster it passes by the gravitational pull, the less it will be bent.
So you keep saying that, but that's incorrect. So it's wrong, it's wrong, it's wrong, it's wrong.
If it is fast enough, it will escape the gravity source, the gravitational pull.
And so if the Earth was flat, it wouldn't escape. It would just fall in gravity and hit the ground eventually. So you could go a very, very fast speed. That means you can go a very, very long distance before gravity collapses you, but it won't change the time it takes for you to be collapsed. It just changes how much distance, how fast you go from here to here. It doesn't change how fast you're falling in the C direction. So here's A to B. How fast you fall to C isn't going to be changed.
And it will not be, or be less and less bend. So yes, I can understand it perfectly.
Okay, so you're not perfectly understanding, and you're certainly not perfectly doing what I requested, which is just draw the simple analogy and explain it in your terms. Explain how it's getting affected by the same amount of gravity. I'm just saying, it's clear, okay? The examples are clear. You go four times higher, but in four times higher, it only takes you twice as much time. You know, that's the example you're supposed to deal with.
How it works, because if I'm gaining more and more energy by being exposed to this force, the force is the same, you're saying. It doesn't matter how much time I'm in it, this matters that I travel through it, then this velocity should increase if I don't bend. If I don't bend, this velocity has to increase. It doesn't increase.
All right, so
yes, the energy can't be destroyed. So the point is if they're going to say I'm going to get hit by the same amount of rain no matter how fast I travel, and if I'm not being bent by the rain, that is, the rain isn't sticking to me or creating any motion, then I have to explain where it went. Okay, where did that energy go? And if it isn't making my forward velocity any faster, then you're in big trouble because you've now destroyed the energy.
The most practical example of this is gravity assist.
So gravity assist, again, has nothing to do with really gravity. It has to do, you know, in the sense that it doesn't have anything to do with the gravitational, the gravity of the body you're using for the assist. Okay, its gravity isn't causing anything. So moving towards it doesn't do anything. All you're doing is locking to something that's moving. So you're becoming part of the mass of an object. That object's moving, and you're taking advantage of the motion of the object in the space. I mean, it says it right there. That's where I stopped listening to the video. It says it right in the Wikipedia page he shows. So this has absolutely nothing to do with the argument I'm making. This is two-system gravity. This is, you're taking advantage of something being in an orbit, okay, that has a velocity around the sun. You're taking advantage of that motion. You're not taking advantage of any gravity the actual object has. The moon's gravity isn't what gave... You can't slingshot on the moon's gravity. You have to slingshot on the motion of the moon around the Earth, or the motion of the moon around the sun. You have to take advantage of velocity in some other direction than the direction of the actual gravity well you're talking about. So there was no secondary gravity, no thirdary, no extra other gravity sources. There's just the one source in the example.
Gravity assist, so they make use of the gravitational pull to accelerate stuff.
Right, it says right here... any gain or loss in kinetic energy and velocity by passing the spacecraft is correspondingly lost or gained by the gravitational body. So you're taking the energy from the motion of the body. All right. In accordance with Newton's third law, the gravity assist, okay, was first used. So it's the assist is provided by the motion of the gravitational body as it pulls on the spacecraft. Okay, any gain or loss. It says here, it's okay here. The spacecraft speed increases as it approaches the planet and decreases as it leaves. The speed gain from approaching and the speed loss from leaving is nearly identical, but the spacecraft is affected by the planet's motion around the sun during the maneuver. Right there, it's telling you, this is what it's stealing. It's stealing the idea that the thing is moving around the sun. You're stealing this motion. It has nothing to do with the gravitational pull of the individual object you're connecting to. You're stealing its motion in a bigger space, which has nothing to do with my experiment.
Lights, for example, the Voyager 1 and 2. Here we have an animation of the Voyager 2 passing by planets, and we can see how its pathway is being bent and how it...
Yes, right. None of that, and there'd be no velocity increase if those objects weren't orbiting the sun. So again, my analogy is not a moving body, okay? It's one sitting in space by itself. It's not in motion around anything. It doesn't have any other velocity. It's just producing gravity. You're going to fly through that gravity. That's the analogy. That's the thought experiment.
How it accelerates.
So see, obviously I could just make the object be moving in the opposite direction. You can use it to assist, or you can use it to slow down. If you want to slow your velocity down, you just go in the opposite way. You go in at this angle, the object's moving at this angle, then you can just use the gravity well to slow you down, to take your velocity away.
The Voyager in this case is the purple line we have to follow. So first we have to wait until the animation is going to replay. So now it passed by Neptune.
So I didn't watch this part. So if I guess he's just going to play animations completely unrelated to the points made. Okay, great.
The Earth, obviously. Here it goes. Passes by Jupiter, being bent and accelerated. It bends and it accelerates. Bends and it accelerates. So of course, in this case, each planet has a certain trajectory. They are in orbit, moving a certain way. So let's say this is the planet. This is a planet moving that way.
So again, why are you making it move? What does that have to do with the simple argument? Okay, this is about what the gravity of the object is doing. All right, we're not talking about its motion. We're talking about the object. You know, I mean, this is like saying, well, wait, what's the intensity of a candle flame? Oh, yeah, well, I'll start moving the candle flame all over space. Okay, no, this is just such bullshit. Come on. Where in my model was there any motion of the body you were connecting to? None. The house isn't moving. The house has a hole in its roof. Rain is coming through the hole in the roof. You are moving in the rain, in the hole. That's the analogy.
That kind of orbit. This is the Voyager moving like that. If the Voyager is going rather slow, if it's going too slow, it will be affected by gravity a lot and it will crash. Yes, makes sense. If it's going faster, it will do something like this. If it's going even more faster, it will be...
Right, so you want to get more and more from it. You go in as slow as you can, in a sense, because that'll increase the amount of time you're connected to the planet. So the idea is to connect to the planet in the lowest gravity well, so you're connected for the longest period of time. So they actually start going into orbit. That's the real catch, okay? You go into orbit around the planet, then you can let the planet's motion, you can take more energy from it. The longer you're part of its mass, the more energy you're taking from its velocity. So you want to become completely part of its mass and then use a little bit of energy to pull yourself out of the gravity. It's the same energy you got when you went into the gravity.
Less bend and even more faster like this. So the faster it goes, the lesser it will be bent. So in this case,
right, and it won't gain anything in terms of velocity. You'll be connected to the planet less time. So even using your silly straw man wrong argument, the fact is the faster you go through the gravity well, say this was Venus and you're going to use it to try to, slingshot, the faster you go through the slingshot, the less you'll get from it. And you should be getting, again, the same amount, because you're going through the same amount of gravity, technically. You're just going through it faster. So the faster you go through the gravity well of Venus, the less you're going to be able to slingshot.
suppose that you mean a gravity well, so a planet, for example, a planet just standing still.
There we go. Yes, yes. So let's get back to the real one. Okay, let's see if he does anything with this real example.
Not in orbit, not in orbit, not with no velocity, and then an object passes by with a certain velocity. Question is, so if it is affect, if this object is affected by the gravity.
So we know it's going to be affected by the same gravity, no matter what its speed. It's the same exposure to the planet, by your theory. Your theory says it's the same exposure. Well, the bending should be the same amount. It shouldn't matter what my velocity is. If gravity is a force that doesn't care about time, okay, if it's a force that's affecting you regardless of how fast you pass through it, so if the you know, Galilean relationship, 1, 3, 5, 7, you know, how much space you go through per second, those are the numbers. So if I take that 3 part, where in 1 second I go 3 units of distance, and then the last second I only go 1 unit of distance. Well, there's your 4, okay? There's the gravity, twice the amount of time, 4 times the distance. Well, yes, because you went 3 times the distance here. That's why it averages out to 2. 3 and 1 divided by 2 is 2. Get it? I know, of course you don't get it.
The gravity well, yes, then it will bend. The pathway of this object will bend. And it will bend a lot more the slower it gets. The faster it gets, the less it will be bent.
And your theory says why? Why is it bent less if the force is identical? If it's the same amount of force is going to hit it, no matter how fast I move through it, then how is it possible that it's bent less?
So the question is, if it is not bent, so if it is bent and it is affected by the gravity, it will gain velocity.
It won't gain any velocity. So again, that's impossible. Gravity gives exactly what it takes. So you can't enter it and gain velocity. Yes, you'll gain velocity entering, going into a closer proximity to the planet. But to escape, you're going to lose exactly what you gained. So you'll come back out with the same exact velocity you had when you went into the well. All right, so that doesn't work as an argument. Sorry, fail.
It will come out faster because of the gravitational pull.
You'll only go faster if you crash into the planet. If you leave again, you're never going faster, okay? By the time you leave, you're going to be going the same speed. When you're the same distance away, when you go through the well and then you end up the same distance away from the planet, you'll be going exactly the same speed that you went when you hit it if the planet's not moving. That's the facts, okay? If you're going to crash into the planet, well, yes, then your velocity will increase as the gravity keeps working on you. But again, the faster you go in, the less the gravity is going to affect you. Just a fact. The amount of time you spend in the gravity will decide how much time gravity has to work on you. It's the fact. How wet you get.
So the question is, if it doesn't bend and it keeps going in a perfectly straight line like this.
Well, where was that in my question? Where did I talk about a perfectly straight line? Because frankly, that would require you to go faster than the speed of light, frankly. To get no bending at all, you'd have to go faster than the force is actually moving. The force is going the speed of light. Gravity is moving the speed of light. It's a force going the speed of light. Just like light is going the speed of light, well, gravity is going the speed of light. We know this. Okay, so that's one of the physics. Your physics says we agree with that already. All right, so the force is moving the speed of light. So I'm trying to move faster than the light can hit me. I can't really do that. If I go the speed of light, I'm still going to get hit by a couple of gravity photons, so to speak. So again, if you thought of the gravity well as a light bulb shooting light, you're just saying, how much light am I going to get hit by? Even if I go the speed of light, I'm still going to get hit by a couple of photons. I have to go faster than the speed of light to defeat it, to go to get no bending at all.
Well, then to me, it is not affected by the gravity. Then it's not affected by the gravity at all. If it is affected, it will bend.
So again, if it's not affected, it's the same distance, it's the same amount of gravity you're supposed to be getting exposed to. So you're making my argument for me. Thank you. The faster you go, the less gravity you're getting affected by. You're making my argument.
And even if it's only a little bit, it will bend. But if it's not bending, it's not affected by the gravity. And so it also will not gain speed.
Again, the speed gain was only my argument that your theory says if it's the same amount of force that's moving, it's the same distance, your work equation. We have the same amount of distance. Okay, you don't care about how much time you're exposed to the light. Okay, I'm arguing that of course it matters how much you're exposed. So it's the same distance, you're saying it's got the same amount of force in the direction, okay, going up, going against, pushing it sideways. So like the baseball analogy, it doesn't matter how fast I throw it, the falling rate will be the same. So the bending rate has to be the same no matter how fast I throw it. The curve is the same no matter what the speed is. That arc is the same arc, okay? It's the same fact that you're going to have to change the trajectory of the ball, okay, based on the traveling through the gravity. So you have a certain amount of pushing force in this direction. That force has to reveal itself in a change in your direction. If it doesn't, then it has to be somewhere. And I'm saying it's obviously not in an increase in your velocity.
I think if not affected, it will not bend and it will not gain speed. The velocity will stay the same. It will not increase.
I never argued that it does increase. I argued that if you're going to say it's the same amount of force, you have to explain, well, if it didn't make it go, if it didn't bend it, where did the force go? The force has to go somewhere. It has to be somewhere. So if it's not increasing its forward velocity, where is the force arrow? Where is the F arrow here? You say there's a certain amount of F, 10F. You're saying it's 10F. No matter how fast I travel through it, I get hit by 10F. 10 amount of force. Where is it? If it doesn't change my direction, where is the force?
The fact that it will bend and it will have some effect on the velocity.
So you just said it will have an effect on the velocity. It won't, because frankly, again, you're going in and you're leaving. Gravity gives you a velocity and then it takes it away. You can't go in and out of a gravity well and gain anything if the object isn't moving through space. So again, unless you're stealing its motional velocity. But again, if we have a stationary object, you can't steal anything. You can't gain anything. Whatever you get from gravity, it's going to take on the way out. So if you leave the gravitational well, you'll leave with what you went in with.
So that I can understand, but maybe I'm wrong. So as you can see, I'm agreeing with Gary. I'm agreeing with graph science in this sense. Now, of course.
In what sense? You present an irrational, disconnected subject, okay, in an effort to imply that somehow their velocity is accounted for. That somehow the pushing force that you say is constant, no matter how fast something's going, is the same. Again, your argument is that when Galileo said this is the gravity relationship, okay, you have one unit of distance here, you have three units here. That's how something falls, and that's how something leaves. So something leaves by that 3-to-1 ratio, and it falls by that 3-to-1 ratio. Okay, the first unit of time, okay, it falls this much. The second unit of time, it falls this much, three times more. Your theory is, your energy theory is that these three units gave the object three times the force. This little distance has one unit of force. This big distance has three units of gained energy. When Galileo, Newton, and Descartes would tell you, no, this unit has one unit of energy you're gaining. because it's 1 second or 1/2 a second. And this unit is the same amount of time, and you only gained the same amount. You only gained this much force. So it's this in terms of what force you're gaining. Yes, the distance is 3 times here, but that distance is the same amount of collected force, because it's about how long the rain was falling on you. Gravity is time dependent.
I know, Gabby, this is within the context of kinetic energy, but that will be for another video.
Yes, it is the subject. Kinetic energy is the subject. Your pronouncement, okay, that this distance is all that matters, and it doesn't matter how fast you go through gravity, okay, this is the argument. So I could just turn this arrow pointing directly towards the gravity well. And again, I can make the same argument that the faster I go through the gravity, the less the gravity is going to add to my velocity. And I will end up with a tiny increase in my velocity the faster I go. If I can go near the speed of light, the fact is I'll gain absolutely nothing. So if I can go near the speed of light, I'll gain nothing, because the stream is going as fast as the boat. Okay, the stream, this is how Susskind teaches it. Okay, he talks about water and fluids moving, and you're a boat, and you're going to get pushed by the water. Okay, so if I'm going as fast as the force in the direction the force is pushing, the force cannot push me anymore. It's impossible for the gravity to have any effect on me whatsoever, because I'm going as fast as it is.
More mathematical aspect of it. But for now, intuitive.
So I just tell you, I'm pretty uninterested in the mathematics, especially if they're going to be grounded in lies about what Newton said or what Newton wrote as mathematics. So unless you're going to be honest and say, okay, this has nothing to do with Newtonian physics, and just point out that, yes, this just has to do with an equation written down in 1843 or something, where they decided work equals force times distance, when no, work equals how much force you have and how long you applied it.
Seems to me that, yes, if it is not affected, if it keeps going to a straight line, then it's not affected by the gravity, and it will not increase velocity, or it will not decrease. It will just stay the same.
There you go. Yay! So, I mean, you've conceded the point, essentially, that gravity is like photons, okay? And the faster you move past the photons, the less photons that can hit you. So it's less gravity, less effect. That means it can't possibly be the same time. You know, it's 2 seconds difference in the time, right? We have 4 times difference in the distance, okay? But it's only 1 second difference. It's only twice as much time. This only takes twice as much time as this. And that's deciding how much energy can possibly be gained. So yes, this is 1 unit of energy. This is only 2 units of energy, because it's only 2 seconds in the same force. So you can only double something's, this doubles the mass, the weight. This doubles your weight. This 4 times the distance only doubles your weight. It doesn't quadruple your weight. You only doubled it, because it's only twice as much time being pushed by the stream.
So to my subscribers, if you disagree, please let me know and put it in the comment section.
All right, so he's calling his subscribers the trolls, okay? Notorious potty mouth lying slandering trolls, but okay, whatever.
I'd like to know. That's it. All right. First part of the lie by argument.
And so you conceded a part of it, and then half the video you wasted on a completely different subject. Okay. Thank you. Well, let's finish it.
As a response video. Okay, so that's all, right? Yes, that's all. more to come. So start recording and see you in the next video.
Okay, good. Thank you. So I'll say thank you.
Okay.
All right. And, you know, good. You at least drew what I drew. And then you pointed out how, yes, it makes perfectly good sense that you're getting less bent the faster you go through or by the gravity, the less it can affect you. So thank you for that. All right, so the evil Mickey Farley. The acceleration due to the flyby effects is partially or entirely due to the planet's motion around the sun. Right, so there was no... In the thought experiment, there was no assumption that we're talking about something orbiting a sun. Okay. Kinetic energy is imparted into the satellite, borrowed from the massive planet. So it's not borrowed because you're not going to give it back. Okay. You're stealing it. So it's not borrowed momentum. It's stolen momentum. You've actually consumed some of the planet's energy. Okay, by becoming part of its mass, and you're going to take away, essentially, part of its energy by becoming part of its mass. All right. And then the Olbeth effect, which doesn't have anything to do with anything, could also play a role, but at some point the satellite will only use its reserve fuel for course corrections. Well, the point is that course corrections aren't very expensive. So you can have a very high velocity in a direction, and it doesn't cost you much to change the direction of that velocity. And especially if you use gravity, right? I mean, gravity is sort of a proof of the fact that, you know, direction doesn't mean much. Because you can go into a gravity well this way and do a U-turn and come out of the gravity well in the opposite direction with exactly the same amount of energy you had. So you can turn for free. And if you try to turn this way by shooting stuff out of your spaceship, right, to change all the way to the opposite direction will be pretty expensive. All right, so here's Fartley again. I think Gary is being slippery with language. So exactly what language? So again, more bullshit. More just absolute nonsense. I couldn't make this any simpler. I mean, we have an oscillating lever. I mean, what's so complicated? Again, something's flying by. A hole in the roof and rain is coming in. Can you make it any simpler than this? I mean, little kids could understand this physics. It's so unslippery. Okay. Of course, in Newtonian physics, so again, there's this term they use. They're claiming one half mv squared is Newtonian, when of course it isn't. Newton overtly, directly said, wrong answer. Okay, the speed of an object is a function of time. So here we go. Well... Yes, so obviously its speed is a function of time, and if you're going to interact with some other force, it's going to be a function of time in terms of how much that force can affect you. All right. It experiences gravitational force. So, you know, this is just talking about the speed in a counter direction. So the speed that you move in this direction is a function of time. But we know that that time is the same. You can't change the bending part. You can't change how much gravity is affecting you except by going faster through it. I don't know. There's no other way to say it. If you're going to be exposed, if it's the same force, no matter how fast you travel through it, that's your argument. And of course it isn't. The faster you leave the planet, the higher your launching speed, the more miles per gallon you get. So if you leave going only 2 feet, you'll use... Your fuel economy will be 200 gallons per inch. The faster you leave, the lower that number gets. And eventually, if you leave fast enough, you can reduce it to, like, you know, 2,000 miles per gallon. You know, you'll just keep increasing and increasing how efficient your engine is because you're just evading the gravity. You're evading the force that you're trying to overcome. By getting through it faster, you're getting less wet. So you have to use less energy to dry yourself, however you want to use the analogy. All right, well, anyway, however, the acceleration due to gravity is not. So he said it, and then he said it at the opposite. Let's see, the speed of an object is a function of the time it experienced gravitational force. However, the acceleration due to gravity is not. So what sense can that possibly make? He just contradicted his own statement. The acceleration is merely a function of the distance between the planet and the spaceship center. So we know the distance doesn't matter because we're talking about tiny differences in the gravity. So the difference in the gravity from, you know, from here to another foot higher is so infinitesimally small that no one would consider that in any of these experiments. So that's irrelevant. Okay. You know, this isn't about the fact that gravity gets weaker with distance. We're talking about a field of gravity you're going through where it's pretty consistent. It's going to be the same amount of rain. All right, between the planet and the spaceship center of mass. In some of Gary's videos that I've watched, it seems, so he seems this bullshit, right? There won't be any direct quotes, to be saying the force of gravity changes as a function of time. So again, the force doesn't change. How much gravity you're affected by changes by how much time you're being affected, of course. But the gravity is always the same. So again, the falling ball analogy, you can throw the ball all you want, okay? And if the Earth was flat, okay, then it would be even clearer that the force going down isn't going to be changed by any energy this way. Because you can't possibly escape the gravity. It's going to be exactly the same amount of time to do this as it did to do this or this or this. All of them will be the same amount of time, every single one of them. And you'll fall at exactly the same rate because you're going to be in the gravity exactly the same amount of time. But if you're flying by gravity, that is, you're going in and out of it, well, then you can clearly see that the faster you go through it, the less you're going to be affected by it. So you're just making the hole in the roof versus no roof. This is why he hates it when others paraphrase his ideas. Yeah, I hate it, obviously, because you can't do it accurately. I mean, look, he couldn't even respond to the actual argument being made in the video and had to bring up a completely different subject. Okay, because that reveals the weakness in them now. So there's no weakness in the argument, and Despard just agreed with the argument. And this is the comment he posts on the video. So we have Despard now saying, yes, I understand. If you go through the gravity really fast, it's not going to affect you very much. Yeah. So he's conceded that point. And yet he's pretending that didn't just happen. All right. Amazing. All right, so there are other videos, so I probably should listen to them first before playing them. So this one was just the argument list, which I don't know how useful that's going to be, because we've already seen that you're not exactly very focused on the exact arguments, but whatever. They've been made over and over and over and over again in the video, so they shouldn't be hard to find the arguments. All right, I don't know. So what's this dropping a round object? Okay, this is probably just going to be so fail and a waste of time, but I'll go watch it first. It's 10 minutes. Oh, brother. All right, and again, we know that rotational energy is just about where the mass is. So if you have the mass is in the center, it's going to have a very low velocity, and so it's going to have less energy. The mass is on the outside, it's going to have lots of mass moving at a very quick rate in terms of its rotational energy, therefore it'll have more energy. So if it has anything to do with rotation, this doesn't have anything to do with kinetic energy again. Just off the subject, but anyway. All right, so that's enough of a video. It certainly doesn't have anything to do with the lever argument. I don't know what argument he's going to be using here that has anything to do with my arguments. So that will be the part that will be... let's just play this one. Okay, it's the subject video. So I've made 5 videos, okay?
That right, so this is going to be a short video.
And 2 of them on the subject that needs discussion, okay? Photons and the kinetic energy argument. So those are the 2 important subjects.
To show that I have made a draft science arguments list. So a list of all the arguments, with all the points that that I would like to respond to, or try to respond to. So I post, I wrote the link.
Okay, well, the lever should have been the first one.
In which he gives all of the arguments. So there are the three simple arguments video. Number one, so the entire reason why 1/2 mv² exists is because physics doesn't understand gravity. And there is a flyby argument. Then there is the third law of Newton, equal and opposite reaction. And I'm quoting him, quoting draft science, there is no counter force that shows up to stop a force. And then the analogy, somebody can't have money unless they take it from someone else. Then there is a gun example. There is a lever.
There we go, good.
The history of kinetic energy. For 120 years, they believed and had proven mv². Why did they stick 1/2 in front of it? And then explain how the clay and sand experiment were a mistake. And there's the other video, all of the points here. So about the Professor Lewin experiment, the car that should be twice as massive can't possibly be twice as much due to the lack of attachments. Then the free energy problem, heavier part comes out with more momentum than logically possible. And more statements, the experiments are forced to come up with the results that pleases their theory.
Right, so yes, this is good enough. He just deals with these subjects. I mean, the lever, I think, this is a little bit making, the lever is a direct argument. It's basically telling you, it's showing you a 10-ton train and a 5-ton train on a lever balance perfectly. They weigh the same if you place them in the right positions. And if you oscillate them, they'll do exactly what they do, which is the 5-ton train will move 10 miles an hour and the 10-ton train will move 5 miles an hour, demonstrating that that's exactly the same energy. Because you're using gravity to store it. Gravity gives you back what it takes, okay? It's the same. So you can't make any argument that it's possible that a 5-ton train going 10 miles an hour has twice as much energy as a 10-ton going 5 miles an hour, because guess what? They balance on a lever perfectly. They oscillate on a lever perfectly. All right. Well, now I guess we'll just play the rest of this.
The Eddington experiment for 400 times better resolution from space, and you don't need an eclipse. And they never repeated the Eddington experiment. Why? So then there's a double slit experiment and the equation about force. It's work is force times time instead of force times distance. Then the arguments that that you put it in each one of your videos. You used to put them in each one of your videos on YouTube.
The only reason why they're not there is because the list of videos on the website consumes the you're only allowed 5,000 characters, and so it just consumes all of the ability to leave the other stuff. So I had to make a decision about what's more important, the index of videos or the other thing, and I decided the index of videos is more important.
I also put them here, copy-pasted it here. This is my list for now, just to let you know that I am acknowledging it, that I am aware of it, that I'm not ignoring it.
Close enough. Yeah, so if you can provide just, I mean, you really, there's some of them are more decisive than others, so if you could just do the 10-ton, 5-ton thing on the lever. Frankly, if you can debunk that in some way and say somehow, no, there's twice as much energy on one side of the lever, proven fact. I mean, if you can just show that, then we won't have to have all the other discussions because then physics will be so broken that what's the difference? Or, you know, if you could prove that the rocket ship cares, whether it's the gun barrel going out one side or the bullet going out the other side, that somehow the rocket ship turns because it knows the bullet has 2,000 joules of energy, when it didn't take 2,000 joules to make the bullet. The bullet is the lever argument. Let's just point out, right? I mean, if I could make a theoretical lever that was 1,000 times longer on one side, then I was going to put an object on the other side, and the mass of the lever wasn't going to get in the way. I mean, theoretically, I can do the experiment where I put the gun on one side, and I just drop it, you know, a foot, and I shoot the bullet from the other side of the lever, because it is the same energy. It's 1,000 times less mass moving 1,000 times faster. That makes perfect sense. That's what momentum says is true. That's what Newton, Galileo, and Descartes all kind of understood, is that all you're doing is converting the energy. You can't make energy and you can't destroy energy. Perpetual motion machines are impossible, and free energy machines are impossible. I'll say perpetual motion is impossible unless you go into deep space and then spin an object, and it will continue to spin theoretically forever as long as you don't have any gravity wells to fuck it up.
And I will try to respond to them all. That's it. That's all for this video. Stop sharing. I stopped recording as well.
Okay, yeah, well, he's getting the hang of it. Anyway, this is just going to be so tedious. I can just smell the tedium. The tedium. In 2 years, I haven't gotten any rational arguments to any of these points, so I'm just saying it. They're not going to show up. You're never going to be able to explain how you can create more momentum in a direction and it's not free energy. You're not going to explain how I can't find a way to collect that extra momentum I made for free, referencing the Lewin experiment. You'll never explain that. Ever, 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 as anything other than you made a mistake. There's a mistake, okay? Because it can't happen. You can't make free momentum. Free momentum is free energy. Oh, this is too stupid. Anyway, I mean, the fact that there's such resistance to concede just, you know, things that are just so obvious. And again, the lever argument, the 10-ton train and the 5-ton train, perfectly balanced. Sitting there on the scale, perfectly balanced. And, you know, just give them a little bit of motion and you can see. This is a 10 tons moving half as much as the 5 ton. You can see their equality right in front of your eyes. And you're still going to fight. Try to defend mush. It's terrible.